shore.
Yes, it did. It came right across, right down over top of us, right there.
There is the Hurricane Landfall Project truck. It's all set up, strapped down. We're going to turn all the switches on in just a little while. Standing outside of the Chevy Tahoe, we are getting into the eye wall of Hurricane Gene right now. Four came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida.
These little bullet cams right here that we will use to record that surge.
It's about 9 o'clock now, central time, which means that if we set them up and turn them on right now, they'd run until about noon tomorrow.
Does thunderstorm activity appear to consolidate around that eye?
That is storm surge from the Atlantic Ocean, the overwash coming in.
You're listening to Stories from the Hurricane Highway, the weekly podcast series that takes an in-depth look back at over two decades of tracking hurricanes, technology, behind-the-scenes stories, and much more. I'm your host, Mark Suddeth. So glad you could join me, and thank you for supporting this exclusive podcast via Patreon.
Hi, I'm Mark Suddeth. I'm here in Deerfield Beach, Florida, where the western outfall of Hurricane Katrina is now coming ashore. Mike's showing the Tahoe right here for me. Now let's look up the street. Take a look at the trees here. All of a sudden, the wind jumped up real quick. Came in on shore here along the southeast coast of Florida. There have been power outages.
Hurricane Katrina, without a doubt, the most destructive, single largest impact event that I have ever covered in my entire career. That is what we're going to start taking a look back at in this edition of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. Glad you could tune in. This is going to be a very special series coming up. Multiple parts. It's going to take a few weeks to go over this. This was truly a monumental event, not only in my career, it affected me professionally, and even personally. You know, the emotions that I felt after that event carried with me for a long time. It helped to spark a lot of what we're doing today. I will have different people coming in to help reflect on their points of view. Mike Watkins, Jesse Bass, Greg Nordstrom, as we take a look back at this truly unbelievable, unprecedented, you know, that word gets used probably a little bit too much, but in the case of Hurricane Katrina, this was unprecedented damage and the loss of life in modern times there. Over 2,000 lives lost. That also inexcusable, really, especially considering it was 2005 and we should have known better as a nation, and we didn't. And we paid the price dearly in lives lost, in the damage that was inflicted, the political turmoil. Katrina brought it all. And we're going to get into that in the first part of several here on Stories from the Hurricane Highway. Again, I'm glad you could join me. Let's get started. Well, I think a good place to start is around mid-August. There are several aspects to the Katrina saga that all come together to lead up to this mega event in my career, in my life, and for our country. And so let's just start here around mid-August with the first element of this amazing saga, and that is the rollout of the new companion website, hurricanelivenet.com. That was set up, as I discussed in the last episode, as a sister site to handle all of the live video in this experimental project that I was going to make public. I had to have a way to control the cost. I had no idea of the success of this. Is it going to be popular? You know, and I had to pay for the bandwidth through this company called PlayStream. And the only way to know that it wouldn't bankrupt me was to have a paywall. I had no choice. And so I worked with this gentleman from Alabama, Florence, Alabama. He helped to code the site. I worked with Jason, my longtime childhood friend who does programming. I still work with him today on some incredible stuff. And we go way back, definitely, all the way to science fairs and whatever in elementary school. And so we were working on this ultimate science fair project, right? Hurricane live coverage. That was the ultimate, and it was really incredible what we were putting together, and it was working. We were going to use PayPal and integrate that in with a program that Jason wrote and put on our server so that when someone logged in from signing up through PayPal, they would just use their email address as a username. Didn't even require a password. We just needed a gatekeeper, so to speak, so that this didn't get out of control and either crash the system and then it just doesn't work at all, or I guess worse is that it works so well it doesn't crash and PlayStream sends me an invoice for $37,000 or who knows what. It was scary. It really was, because I wasn't sure what I had. I had an idea, certainly, but you have to be careful when something like this comes along. You let that genie out of the bottle and it can be haunting, right? Some bad things can happen if you're not careful. So I had a lot of great people helping me to get this ready, and it was all ready to go in mid-August. We launched HurricaneLiveNet.com. I promoted it through HurricaneTrack.com, doing these blogs, what we now know as blogging. I wonder if they called it blogging 17 years ago. Doesn't matter. We called it the Hurricane Outlook and Discussion. Now, of course, that is a video production that I do. Back then, it was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of words and embedded pictures and links. And now they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Well, we do it all through video, mostly. Anyhow, I was promoting Hurricane Live Net. We had a few people that had signed up. There was some interest. And it was all generally ready to go. All right, so that part of the puzzle is in place. We're ready for live streaming from the Tahoe, from these three unmanned camera boxes that I've got. All three of those boxes will be accompanied by a Davis weather station, a complete weather station with an anemometer, and an actual console that would give us pressure, temperature, humidity, dew point, all of it. And then a little webcam from Logitech that would act as the last resort backup, I guess. If the live video didn't work, we could at least see a picture. All of this complexity built into each of these three boxes, and it was ready. And it was ready just in time. Because what happened is now, around that same time frame, mid-August or so, a tropical depression, number 10, formed in the Atlantic and went on, at least parts of it, parts of its DNA, as we say, went on to become powerful, historic, Hurricane Katrina. So what I'm going to do is read to you from the Tropical Cyclone Report, the official report from the government, the National Hurricane Center, that's part of the official record forever and ever, about Hurricane Katrina, and we're going to read the synoptic history here, or I'm going to read it to you, and this will give you an idea of how Katrina got started. All right, so what I'm going to do is read this first part of the synoptic history of Katrina, and I will pause after certain sections and kind of explain them and embellish upon them. You'll see. And then kind of, you know, we'll just move forward from this. So here we go. The complex genesis of Katrina involved the interaction of a tropical wave, the middle tropospheric remnants of Tropical Depression 10, and an upper tropospheric trough. So right off the bat here, we see, and they say it, the complex genesis, it was complex. So in layman's terms, Katrina came into being from basically three ingredients. The interaction of a tropical wave, that's the first, the middle tropospheric remnants of Tropical Depression 10, and that's just a fancy meteorological way of saying that the middle atmospheric energy leftovers of TD10, Tropical Depression 10, that's the second ingredient, and then an upper tropospheric trough. That's the TUT that we talk about, the tropical upper tropospheric trough. That's usually something that generates shear over the Atlantic. They're fairly common. And so these three ingredients, the tropical wave, the mid-level energy from TD10, the leftovers of it, and this TUT. Okay, those are the three ingredients. So let's continue. This trough, located over the western Atlantic and the Bahamas, produced strong westerly shear across Tropical Depression 10, causing it to degenerate on the 14th of August, approximately 825 nautical miles east of Barbados. So this is important. The depression, TD-10, was sheared by the TUT, the Tropical Upper Tropospheric Trough. That trough was located over the western Atlantic and the Bahamas. All right, and it produced strong westerly shear across TD-10, way out there east of Barbados. These TUTs can be enormous, taking up a large part of the Atlantic. And they come and go. They do. They come and go. And when they are present, they cause a lot of shear. And when they fill in and dissipate, then the environment can become very, very favorable, especially in a year like 2005. All right? So let's continue. The low-level circulation gradually weakened while continuing westward. And they're talking about the low-level circulation of TD-10. So the low-level circulation gradually weakened while continuing westward, and it eventually dissipated on the 21st of August in the vicinity of Cuba. So the low-level energy of TD-10 died out as it moved westward near Cuba. All right, we're all on the same page so far. Meanwhile, it continues a middle tropospheric circulation originating from Tropical Depression 10 lagged behind. So that's the mid-level energy. We look at this vorticity or the energy or the spin. The mid-level part of it still kind of hung behind, lagged behind, as they said, and passed north of the Leeward Islands on the 18th and 19th of August. So the mid-level energy remained relatively intact, and it moved north of the Leewards on the 18th, 19th of August. Then, to make complex matters even more complex, a tropical wave, they say, which departed the west coast of Africa on 11th of August, moved through the Leeward Islands and merged with the mid-level remnants, the mid-tropospheric remnants of TD-10 on the 19th of August and produced a large area of showers and thunderstorms north of Puerto Rico. So we've got the mid-level circulation of TD-10 and this tropical wave that moved off of Africa on the 11th of August caught up to that. Those two energy sources combined and gave us a large area of showers and thunderstorms north of Puerto Rico around the 19th of August. The discussion continues with this activity continued to move slowly northwestward, passing north of Hispaniola, and then consolidating just east of the Turks and Caicos during the afternoon of the 22nd of August. Dvorak, which is a technique, Dvorak satellite classifications from the Tropical Analysis and Forecast Branch of the Tropical Prediction Center began at 1800 UTC that day. So at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the 22nd, they started basically what we know now it would be an invest, right? And the Dvorak satellite classification, usually it's 2 week or it gets a 1.0. And then a 1.5 and a 2 and a 2.5 and so forth. It's just now we know this, and they did it back then. They called these invests, but that didn't become sort of a public thing until probably the last 10 years or so. But anyway, that was on August 22nd that basically it would have been termed an invest, and it would have been all over the internet, I'm sure, and so forth. But we didn't have it social media like we do now back then. And so there's that. So anyway, that happened on the 22nd. I told you this is complex. So that began on the 22nd. Then, as they continue, the upper tropospheric trough weakened as it moved westward toward Florida and the shear relaxed enough to allow the system to develop into a tropical depression by 1800 UTC, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the 23rd of August, over the southeastern Bahamas, about 175 nautical miles southeast of Nassau. So it became a depression on the 23rd. So that would be number 12, all right? So they go on to explain that the depression was designated TD-12 rather than remaining 10 because a separate tropical wave appeared to be partially responsible for the cyclogenesis, and more importantly, the low-level circulation of Tropical Depression 10 was clearly not involved. This was some controversy, I remember, back in the day. What was the, you know, what was the true origin of Katrina? And as I just read and explained, it was very complex. And so the bottom line resulted in two very important keys here to remember. We have a new depression kind of amalgamated from several different weather features coming together, kind of unusual, and that upper tropospheric trough, the TUT, had basically weakened and what we call filled in, and the environment over the Western Atlantic and especially the entire Gulf of Mexico was becoming very favorable for development. Very light wind throughout the air column from the surface of the ocean all the way up to the stratosphere. Generally light easterly winds were setting in, no westerly opposing winds against this system. And so now the stage was set. We had TD number 12 in the southeast Bahamas on the 23rd of August, and that was my cue to get ready to go, pack up my stuff, and head to South Florida. All right, it's now Wednesday, August 24th, 2005, which is coincidentally the 13th anniversary of another significant hurricane landfall, and of course, that would be Hurricane Andrew in 1992. So it was on this day in 2005 that Katrina got a name, well to the southeast of the Florida Peninsula, down in the Bahamas near the Turks and Caicos. That was on the 24th at 11 a.m. Eastern. That was the advisory time that the National Hurricane Center officially upgraded TD-12 to Tropical Storm Katrina. And I was back in southeast North Carolina. Obviously, I had been watching and communicating with Jesse and Mike and even Paul out in Nevada and Jason, you know, getting everybody on alert. Here we go. This could be the first big test of this unmanned camera system. And, you know, just a lot was riding on it. And I was nervous about it, excited about it. You know, it's always exciting in a very different way that I can't explain even after all these years to go into a hurricane and do what I do. And this being such a revolutionary idea, I was even more excited. But there was a lot riding on it because it could fail and just be a spectacular failure, because even before the age of social media, when you fail on the internet, everybody knows about it. So, you know, I was definitely nervous, but the anticipation overwhelmed me and I got past my nervousness and I got ready. And so I packed everything up at my house there in Leland, the three unmanned camera systems, the weather stations that went with them from Davis Instruments. The Tahoe itself was outfit, of course, with an Arm Young anemometer on the back, on a mast, that fed up to a wind gauge, or a display unit, more accurately, on the dashboard called a wind tracker from Arm Young. I packed, you know, clothes, and everything was ready to go. You know, I was going to go by myself to begin with, traveling probably to Titusville, Florida, on my first leg, and that would be Wednesday the 24th. It usually takes a few hours to get everything packed. And, you know, I figured I'd get down there kind of late Wednesday night, get a good night's sleep, and head down to Fort Lauderdale and vicinity on Thursday the 25th to meet up with Mike Watkins. That was the plan. So that's what I did. I got everything ready, everything loaded up. And it was incredible to be able to see the back of the Tahoe. It's a shame we didn't have iPhones like we do now, or other smartphones, you know, to just take pictures and tweet stuff, because it would have been impressive. All of this equipment, I may or may not have had a digital camera back then. I can't remember. I think I did. And I might have taken pictures of everything loaded up. I don't know. But it was impressive. These three big, like I say, footlocker-sized cases with these camera systems attached to them. And it weighed a lot. Each of these cases weighed close to 100 pounds each. My clothes, other stuff, you know, just packed as much as I could in there to be ready for this potential epic mission that it looked like would encompass two landfalls, one in South Florida, probably Thursday, Friday, something like that. And then it would go over Katrina Wood into the Gulf. And it looked early on like it was going to turn north and affect the Florida Panhandle as a Category 1 or 2 hurricane. And that seemed to be the extent of it. And we call that a two-for-one special for obvious reasons. So off I went. And as soon as I left my driveway in Leland, North Carolina, which is just outside of Wilmington, as I have mentioned before, I was live on the website, on hurricanelivenet.com, had a handful of people watching the live feed. A couple people would email me. I had email there in the vehicle all the time with the Sony Vaio, of course, and I had audio, so I could literally talk to people, and this was a first. More than likely, I mean, nobody else has been able to prove me wrong yet. It isn't a contest, I know that, but, you know, stuff like this matters. I am pretty sure, with 99% confidence, that I was the first person ever to stream live, wall-to-wall, as best you can. I mean, there's going to be interruptions. You got to go to sleep, you turn the stream off, whatever. But driveway-to-driveway coverage of a hurricane over the internet using live mobile streaming video. I don't think anybody had done it before, and they certainly weren't doing it for Katrina. And it was interesting because I had done a press release using, I think, PR Web leading up to this. And I remember I took a different route. I was not in a real big hurry. And I say a different route. Normally, we go out Highway 74, 76 out of Wilmington, Leland area to Interstate 95 at Lumberton, go south. And if you're going to Florida, you just take 95 south all the way to Florida. But that's boring. It's, you know, nothing but interstate out there. It's like, oh, especially by yourself. And I wasn't in too big of a hurry, so I took the long way, so to speak, the more scenic route, and that is through Brunswick County, Highway 17 into South Carolina, Georgetown, Charleston, and then you pick up Highway 17 to I-95 near Savannah, Georgia. And that's what I did. And I remember driving down there through Georgetown, Highway 17 there, getting between Georgetown and Charleston. And a couple of people were emailing me from these companies that will produce like a news report. It's kind of like a news story about your product or service. And they pitch it to the news media as a news story, but it's a paid promotion. It's kind of like a news slash infomercial. I don't remember the term for it that this guy said, but my press release generated some interest is what it came down to. And so this one guy emailed me and we talked on the phone while I was driving. And I remember back then, and there's pictures of me wearing this thing out there on the internet. My sort of go-to way of talking on the phone was this headset that I would wear. You know, it looks like a headset that people would wear at a call center. It would plug in with like a 1/8 inch jack to the bottom of my Sprint phone, and that's how I would talk on the phone. I'd leave the phone charging through a cable that had it plugged in to the inverter. I didn't use a cigarette lighter adapter back in the day. I do now. Just powered it with this huge inverter that I had. Why not? I mean, it even had a power strip on it. You could power all kinds of stuff until you ran out of watts. You know, the inverter can only handle so much, but it was pretty big at 750. Anyhow, that's what I did. I would talk on the phone, do whatever I have to do, wearing a headset so I could stay hands-free. And so I talked to this guy from one of these companies, and he pitched this whole idea of a news story that they would then pitch to a whole bunch of TV stations around the Gulf Coast and Florida or whatever. And, you know, it sounded exciting. It was a little late because I was on my way, right? It's like, well, you know, how am I going to do this now? And then I said, well, how much does something like this cost? And I remember, it's clear as day, what he said, $20,000. I was like, yeah, I don't have that kind of a budget. You know, I appreciate it. And he was pretty persistent. And he's like, well, maybe we could do it for 18. I was like, no. And he's like, 17. And I had to get pretty firm with him. I was like, look, this is brand new. I'm not going to be able to put that kind of money into it. I don't even know if it's going to be popular. Nobody's ever done this before. And he would retort with, well, that's why we have to do this. Nobody's ever done this before. It sounds extraordinarily exciting. And I'm like, I simply don't have that kind of capital to just throw at this. There's no way to produce anything. He's like, well, we'll send some people to interview you. And the guy tried really hard, but I said no and left it at that. I had a few other TV stations that picked up on the press release, and they were interested in what I was doing. And somehow, some way, a gentleman named Jim Reed, who was and still is a very famous storm and a natural phenomenon, is a good way to put it, photographer, Jim Reed Photo, I think is his website, .com, Jim Reed Photo, R-E-E-D, Jim Reed, very easy to find on the internet, very accomplished, shoots for Nikon, just some extraordinary stuff. He contacted me, and we had known each other a little bit after Isabel and the big year of 04 with Charlie. We became friends, and our mutual friend and colleague, Mike Tice, we were all starting to get to know each other a little bit more. And so Jim saw this press release, and he contacted me. And he was interested in covering Katrina too, especially the Gulf Coast part. And he mulled over maybe meeting up with me in Mobile. If we got that far, we'll see. He was thinking about it. He's like, I'm going to cover this. It's going to get some press. And I think it would be neat to cover what you're doing. And I was like, yeah, I agree. And I knew that Jim was an accomplished photographer, and he had some big connections out there. And I was excited about that potential. He was also talking with Mike Tice, Mike is younger than me by several years, up and coming storm photographer, hurricane, tornado chaser at the time. Now he's big time name, right? Mike's in the big time. And he was going to do some stuff covering Katrina, and he was going to use this device that he came up with called the Tice device, which was kind of this glass pyramid that had a VX2000 Sony camcorder in it that would record for, I think, 1 hour. It's not live. It's just kind of like our GoPro cams are now. That's what Mike had. He was using it for some tornado stuff in the Great Plains, and he was going to cover Katrina too. So Jim was trying to figure out, is he going to hang with Mark and cover my angle or go with Mike Tice? And we'd just wait and see. So all these things are happening. I'm streaming live, interacting with a couple people over email, which was really surreal. Now, of course, we can do it in almost real time. We know now that I can talk to you if you're listening to the stream, and YouTubers and live streamers do this all the time. Now it's no big deal. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. But back in 2005, it was very rare. And for storms and hurricanes, like I said, I was the first. And so doing this was remarkable. And I remember talking to a couple people. One was a lady named Martha, who lived in Wilmington. She worked with Dan Summers, who was the emergency management director for many years, and a good friend of mine, now down in Collier County in 2005, which is Naples. Anyway, Martha was one of our very first supporters, subscribers to this new system, the Hurricane Live Net. And it was just neat to be able to get an email, hey, Mark, I'm watching and listening, and this is exciting. Glad to support it, Martha. And I was like, whoa, hey, Martha, I got your email. And it immediately dawned on me that this is interactive. I guess I never had considered that. And that was amazing. It really was. A couple other people, I think there was a woman named Barbara. Might have been a couple other people. There was a guy from Sprint that I was working with. His name is Randy. He's a technician and engineer from Tampa. Paul could email me and talk to me through email. And, it was just, we were just starting something here. You know what I mean? It was the dawn of what we know now is just no big deal. We start up a stream and we're running live and we have chat. We can talk to people and it's near instantaneous. Well, that started 17 years ago. I'm not saying I was the first ever with anything related to live streaming, but for Weather coverage, yes, it was. And it was so neat. So there I go, literally seeming like I'm talking to myself in the vehicle. That's what had to be funny about it. You can imagine if you're driving beside me and the Tahoe looked like something out of Twister, or some people say Ghostbusters. It has all these gadgets on it and whatever. Clearly some kind of a storm-chasing, hurricane-chasing SUV. And there's this guy who just looks like he's talking to himself, because I would be able to talk to people through the stream. You guys know that now. And again, now it's no big deal. And people always seem like they're talking to themselves now because of Bluetooth and hands-free built into the car or whatever. But you can imagine 17 years ago, it had to look pretty weird. Who is that guy talking to? Gosh, that poor fella. I mean, whatever. But it was revolutionary, and it was so cool. It helped to keep me awake and engaged, you know, and focused, because, you know, I'd get an email, and it would be from whomever, you know, and I could respond back. And I felt like even though there was a delay, sometimes several minutes, between the time I would say something and they would email back. And I have to interject that this is before we had chat, like we do now with our C-Box chat or YouTube chat or whatever. So it was all done by email. And so there was a delay of several minutes occasionally. But it was what it was, and it worked. So I made my way south, got to Savannah, got on to Interstate 95. It gets towards dark, and I got on the phone with Jesse, and we were talking about things. I'm in northern Florida by this point, probably south of Jacksonville. Katrina looks like it's going to strengthen. You know, it's a tropical storm already, and it's going to threaten South Florida, some of the big metro areas, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm, down towards Deerfield Beach. All right, that's a big clue. We're going to talk about that in a moment. And, of course, Miami. And then it looked like it was going to go across, you know, Alligator Alley, roughly, affecting the Everglades, and then eventually maybe Naples there in Collier County, and then move out into the southeastern Gulf of Mexico and re-strengthen or strengthen further, whichever way it would go. We all know what happened. It just kept going. There was no weakening over land. We'll get to that. But, you know, there was much more anticipation and a growing concern the farther south that I traveled. And the deeper into the evening that I went on the 24th there of August. So I finally made it to Titusville. Was tired, but, you know, pretty good spirits overall. And I remember talking to the folks on the stream, and I thought, okay, why don't I disconnect the laptop, you know, unplug it, bring it in, the camera and everything, and run it from the hotel room looking down on the parking lot. I could bring up a little tripod. Like, I was going to make a big deal about this. I would mute the audio so that you didn't hear me snoring. Nobody needed that. Give me some privacy. And I thought, yeah, you know, I promise 24-hour coverage of a hurricane if I can. You know, if there's a network signal to be had, my goal was to stay live as long as possible. So that's exactly what I did. I brought my bags in, and I remember, in those of you that know my travels now, I'm a Hilton Brands person, a Hilton Honors member, and I remember clearly staying at a Hampton Inn in Titusville for this event. That was the first night, very muggy out, as you would imagine, in late August. Again, it's kind of late, kind of breezy, easterly wind coming in there. You can just feel the moisture in the air, very ripe and lots of energy. Brought my bags in, whatever I had, the laptop. Yeah, I had to turn the stream off for a few minutes, and with the the notion that within 5 or 10 minutes I'll turn it back on again, and I'm going to leave the camera in the room. I'll have everything plugged in, and you'll just be able to watch out the window. Maybe there'll be a squall that comes through or just whatever. Again, live wall-to-wall coverage was my goal, my promise, if you will, and there I was in Titusville, ready to go, was going to get a good night's sleep and get up the next day, head on down to Fort Lauderdale, and tackle what became Hurricane Katrina. All right, so that wraps up day one of the Katrina saga. I had made it from Leland, North Carolina, down to Titusville, Florida. I am now safe and sound at the Hampton Inn, streaming live the entire way, interacting with a few people. Truly remarkable what we were going to be doing, and everything was set. I had plans to meet up with Mike on Thursday down in South Florida, also to go over and meet a friend of ours that we knew through the Project Impact program, and eventually go on to get ready for phase two of Katrina over on the Gulf Coast. So I will cover all of that. Again, like I said before, this is going to take a few episodes to get through, and that's good. We can break this up probably day by day. I think that'll be a really good way to do this, because I believe I was on the Katrina mission for maybe 5-6 days, maybe longer. And we won't stretch this out to 6 or 7 episodes or anything like that, but breaking this up into multiple episodes, I think, will be helpful as we progress through different phases and tackle all of the topics related to this extraordinary event in hurricane history and in the history of what we were doing with Hurricane Track, the Hurricane Live Net, the Hurricane Landfall Project. Just amazing stuff, and I can't wait to tell you all about it as we continue on next week's episode of Stories from the Hurricane Highway. As always, it's great to have your support, great to have you tuning in. I appreciate it. Stick around. Next week, it's going to get even more interesting. The plot thickens, as they say, as we get into the landfall of Katrina in South Florida. We will pick up on that and much, much more as we progress through this incredible Katrina story. I am Mark Sutter for HurricaneTrack.com. Thanks again for tuning in. I'll talk to you next week.